January 17, 2023, it's a Wat Pedro Show.
Coltrane's repertoire omvat onder andere So What. Vandaar onze vraag hoe het met de akkoorden gaat.
But now I prefer the rhythm to be free. I had to get it beat into my skull, but I accept this principle now. At first I wasn't sure, because I was delving through sequences and I felt that I should have the rhythm play the sequences right along with me, and we all go down this, mm-hmm. you know, this winding road. But after several tries and failures and failure, it seems better to have them free to go, as they, you know, as free as possible, and then you superimpose whatever sequences you want to over it.
En al heb ik het gevoel op dit moment niet veel verder te komen, iemand als Eric in onze groep maakt dat ik niet stil zal blijven staan.
Yeah, you know, kind of gives, like, it just helped me out right longer now, because I'm not actually producing right now. I'm just sort of sitting and listening and trying to look at the Jones Air scene and try to see what has been done that I can adapt to what I feel and to help me to move out of, you know, what I've been doing in the last 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. I think you can get stagnant, you know? Yeah.
Sometimes I wake up.
Watch for Pedro show. Happy Tuesday. Is it Tuesday? No, it's Monday. I think so.
It's Monday. Next Tuesday.
Yeah, it is. You can tell I'm not man alone. We started the show off with John Coltrane talking to Michael DeRuiter on the November 1961, a little while ago, about having the rhythm be more free. He's talking about composition, getting away from that harmonic stuff and get more rhythm. And also, he wanted to pursue more melody. I'm just finishing my seventh book on him. This is like a Coltrane and Coltrane, Chris DeVito's book on, like, quotes, giving interviews and stuff. Then we had Gina Birch with I Play My Bass Loud. And because of those software engineers from Estonia with their Skype invention, I am not man alone. I have with me Gina Birch all the way from London. Welcome aboard, Gina.
Hello, thank you.
Absolutely.
Great to be here.
Great honor to have you. I've been listening to music a long time. We were talking off air, people, about Gina helping Mayo Thompson, and also my missing man guitarist Tom Watson has helped Mayo Thompson. Yeah. So, but I want to learn about Gina Birch's journey through music. So, Gina, if you would you please bring your earliest musical recollection memory?
Oh, you mean what I saw and heard and or when I started to play?
No, your earliest musical memory. So it's probably before you played. But remember, it's a Watt from Pedro show. There's no hard questions. There's no wrong answers.
Okay. Well, you know, I was brought up a Catholic and lots of hymns and then musicals. You know, I loved The Sound of Music and those Julie Andrews films, you know, like Just a Spoonful of Sugar Helps the Medicine Go Down.
Right. And then Sound of Music had song John Coltrane cover, My Favorite Things, a waltz. That has both major and minor, people.
Yes.
You can have it in the same song. There's no problem. It's all a device to tell your story. So
I like that. Anyway, then...
Your first instrument was your voice, singing.
Oh, yeah. My dad... I used to sing in the back of the car, and my dad would say, oh, shut up, Gina, after a while.
Okay.
But we would sing together for a while, for some of the time, but I wouldn't stop. You know, I couldn't stop. I think I just kept going and going and going until it drove him around the bend.
Well, let me ask you this. In the pad you grew up, was there instruments?
No. No one played an instrument.
Can I ask you about school? Were you in the choir or the marching band or shit like that?
I did do a bit of singing in school, but it wasn't really a big thing. No, I didn't play any instruments. My dad bought a little record player when I was probably about 9 or so, and then my dad said each week one of us in the family could choose a single, a 45. And it was 6 shillings and 8 pence then, and I chose Herman's Hermits, No Milk Today. But I remember, you know, we had lots of...
Saying that's the first record you bought with your own money?
Yeah.
Wow. Now, let me tell you about Herman's Hermits. That's the first time I heard rock and roll bands from England sing with England accents.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because the other guys were kind of, you know... big fans of the blues and stuff, so they were kind of doing that voice. Not until Johnny Rotten. Well, maybe Sid Barrett. He sang kind of with his own accent.
Yeah.
So what was the first gig you saw?
Oh, I think it might have been The Faces. That's the first one I remember with Rod Stewart.
Sure.
The Faces.
The band that came after The Small Faces.
Yeah, or maybe it was The Small Faces.
Well, Small Faces had Steve Marriott singing, but then he left for Pete Frampton's Humble Pie.
Yeah, you see, you're much more of a music nerd than me. I'm.
You know what the first gig I went and saw?
Go on, then.
T-Rex.
Oh, amazing. Amazing.
I was 14 years old. It was 1973. And, but it wasn't a club, so he was tiny.
Yeah. Well, I remember in my gig, I was right up the front, and I remember we were all stamping and shouting because they didn't come on, you know, that building up the excitement.
Great bass man, Ronnie Lane.
That's what I remember most, the stomping before they came on. I don't remember what happened after they came on. That's what kind of a music nerd I am. I like all the kind of preamble. But yeah, okay. I mean, you know, I never thought I'd be involved in music. It wasn't. I like singing, and I've always kind of rocked back and forward. I like a kind of crazy woman rocking. And I, you know, music really soothes me. But I never ever thought I would play it or be singing in public or anything like that. It just wasn't on the cards, you know. I went to art school, and that's where I thought I'd be, you know, making little films or painting. And basically, I came from the provinces. I came from Nottingham.
Oh, Sleaford Mods.
Sleaford Mods, yeah, they are from Nottinghamshire. I never knew them in Nottingham. I have seen them many, many times, though, in London. I love them.
Can you tell me how you got on bass?
Well, I'd seen the Sex Pistols' first gig by chance. Fell in.
Was that the Hundred Club?
No, it was at St. Martin's School of Art.
Because I got to play, first time I played in England was the Hundred Club. And I remember the boss there telling me that Sex Pistols played there early on their thing.
Yeah, they did play there early, but the first gig in central London was in St. Martin's. And if you watch Pistol, haven't watched that that drama about the Sex Pistols?
No.
I think it's really good. I think it's great.
I don't have enough patience to watch shit like that. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
but they were an important band to us. Very inspiring. Like he sang with his accent. That was really intense. And also to hear words, it was like kind of seeing. I remember when me and D. Boone saw The Exorcist. We never saw a little girl in a movie. Well, it was Mercedes Cambridge's voice, but cuss like that in a movie. We were 13. It was around the time we saw T-Rex.
You lost me a bit there. But I was just going to say with John Lydon, you know, the way he performed, it was kind of like, you know, a cross between, you probably don't know the TV show Steptoe and Son. It was like an amazing kind of crazy sitcom. And there was a Albert Steptoe. So, you know, everyone kind of thought that John Lydon kind of picked up stuff from Albert Steptoe and Richard III, you know, a great mixture of kind of cultural, British cultural icons. And, He just had this incredible charisma, you know. He really did have something very special.
Yeah, I got to see Public Image when they first came here with Jah Wobble on bass.
Yeah,
and
amazing.
I got to interview Jah Wobble. That was the first band he joined. How'd you like your first band to be Public Image?
Well, he'd been playing a lot, you know. It wasn't like he was like, I mean, with me, I got on stage after only having held an instrument for a few weeks, you know.
I want to get into that, but look, you gave me some music. I want to play I Wish I Was You.
Yeah. when you ask me, when you ask me if I'm a feminist, I say to hell with powerlessness, to hell with loneliness, damn all those people putting women down. Yes, there are women in positions of power, but so many more in chains and drudgery. Tortured, ignored, undermined, undervalued, raped, abused. So when you ask me if I'm a feminist, I say, why the hell would I not be? So when you ask me if I'm a feminist, I say,
I shake, but quickly come home. pulled the curtains and I made them sound like me. And yet the simple life was the most complicated place I've ever been. I was inside when the storm came. I was looking out at sea.
She loves.
Watch for Pedro's show. That chunk of music, it started off with Gina Birch doing Wish I Was You. And we got Alice Coltrane doing a harp solo from a 1970 documentary on her. Etage 34, like the 34th floor in French. Pardon my fucking destroying that language. With Tenko, great singer lady from Tokyo, doing Densi. Then Victoria Shen, part 6 of 8 of her Redbreast piece. She's got this invention. She calls a bass collar. She wears this thing and can make bass sounds, people. No strings involved. But it gets low is where she goes. Dame Aria, after that, with Vivo Iquero. Gina Birch with Feminist Song. Diane Marie Clova with Rubber Sold, not the Beatles album. Adele Mida with Naya Zvezdko Roztopi, kind of Slovak Hungarian, a little border theme there. That's where Adele comes from. And Maxina Funko with Nicest Thing. And finally, Gina Birch with No Love. So, okay. You get on the bass, you're on stage within weeks. How did you get on the bass in the first place? You said you saw Sex Pistols play.
Yeah, I saw a lot of those.
That must have been Glenn Matlock on bass at that time, right?
Yes, it was. I saw a lot of those bands play, and they were nearly, 99% male. Men, young boys.
Yeah, but X-ray specs.
Yeah, I said 90%. I did 100%. So the thing is that...
No, you're right. There's always been a problem with boys, Bogart and rock and roll.
And also, when you've got... When it's the singer who's female and the band's all male, I know they had Laura Logic on sax.
Yeah. She's coming back. She's putting out some music, I heard.
Laura Logic was thrown out of X-ray specs after about 3 or 4 gigs, because the manager didn't like the competition with the singer. It's crazy. So they
Well, the crazy thing is the manager having any fucking say in a band.
Yeah, well, I think Polly had a bit of say, too. I don't think she was without say. But anyway, so, that is a thing. But I will argue with you here because I don't think that just being the singer makes for me to be inspired to pick up an instrument where I've never played an instrument before. The band that made me want to pick up an instrument was when it was 4 young, brilliant women called the Slits.
Oh, yeah, great band. Great they bass. A big fat reggae sound from that lady, yeah.
Yeah, they were so fantastic on their very first gig. They were very chaotic. Ari and Palmolive were fighting, and Tessa was still cool on the bass.
She was the bass, yeah. I saw them at the Whiskey. They didn't have Budgie like the album. They had Bruce from the pop group.
Yeah, what year was that?
It was 79. It was called Cut Up or something. Cut.
The album.
Right.
Yeah, you see, for me, that is post Palmolive. Palmolive started the band.
Right, okay.
She found Ari, and she started the band. So for me, what was great was the 4 women playing. And then
let me tell you about the Hollywood punk scene. There was a lot of ladies. They didn't, the only full one was maybe Go-Go's, a little later.
Yeah, but what year was that? I'm talking 76, 77.
No, I'm talking about 70s when you saw the Bags. The bass player now is married to the Dam singer. The Germs had a lady on bass, Lorna. X had a singer. Okay, but there was ladies playing instruments in Hollywood punk bands in the '70s.
What year though? You see every 70s. Minute.
Okay, the first all girl band. I don't know if you would call it punk yet, but they were called the Runaways.
Yeah, but they were formed by that guy,
Jim Fowley, manager.
You see, we're not on the same page here, I'm afraid. Okay. I'm not going with your thing. I'm not. For me, I was a young woman. I never thought I would play an instrument. It wasn't something that was in, it wasn't on my mind. It wasn't even something I could conceive of. You know, like my mum was a secretary. All my friends' mums were secretaries.
My mom too.
They did what their dads told their mums to do, you know. So I came from this era where women were bloody put in the kitchen or on the typewriter. So when it came to being able to be in a band, it was like revolution. It was revolution. It wasn't just nothing. It was revolution. And so seeing the Slits for me was like totally, totally crazy, brilliant. And I thought, this is what I want to do. This is where I want to be. It was just like out of this world for me.
But what about, well, it sounds like you want to be in a band, but what about the bass?
Well, it wasn't like I was in love with the bass at that point. I thought I didn't feel confident that I could be the singer or the guitarist or the drummer. But I thought, yeah, Tessa was cool. The bass had four strings. Maybe I could handle that. So I could sneak in with the bass. But so I went one day, I went down to the local shop and I said, what is your cheapest bass guitar? They said, here we are, this is £30. I said, do you want to try it? They said, no. I said, I just grabbed it and I took it home and I taught myself to tune it, and then I found these patterns on the neck. You know, I was a visual artist, so I worked in patterns, and like a lot of reggae bass lines are like, they're visual patterns to me. So I started to learn that, and then I started to try and play little melodies, and Anna and I got together, and then Richard Dudansky, who played for a bit in Public Image and played with Time and Dog and everything, he was playing with Time and Dog in the local, in the Tabernacle, and they came round to our rehearsal where we'd only been playing for a few weeks, and he said, will you play with, he said, you are going to come and play with me and Timon at the Tabernacle. And we were like, no, we're not ready. We don't know what we're doing. And he was like, yes, you do. You'll be fine. So that's how we ended up playing our first gig after a few weeks of having the Bloomin' bass guitar. And it was, it went from there.
Who came up with the name of the band?
Well, Anna comes from Madeira, a little island of Africa, Portuguese island. And she found, I think she found London very romantic, and I think she liked the rain. We went through lots of different names, but I think, we just kind of settled on the Raincoats because it just felt like it was kind of rainy London, something. And we protect you from the rain.
Well, what about first Raincoats gig? Can you remember it?
Yeah, that's it, at the Tabernacle. We had Ross Crichton on guitar.
Was boys in the band. And that guy who asked you to play, was he actually playing, or was he in one of the other bands on the bill?
He was Richard Dudansky. He was playing with Time and Dog.
Okay.
And Time and, I don't know if you know. I mean, he played on various clients. Basically, Timon was a squatter with Joe before Joe Strummer went into the Clash. They all squatted together, Timon and Joe and Richard and Esperanza, Pomolive's sister, and Pomolive. Pomolive was with Joe and, I don't know. God, you're making me into a music nerd now.
No, I just want to know a little about your journey, that's all. And so, you guys start, there's a circuit to tour in England, right, in those days, or no? Did you just play London?
Well, what happened was we played in the Tabernacle, which was a local Notting Hill, kind of churchy thing. I don't know what a tabernacle is, but it's a churchy thing.
Yeah,
and
of course.
And then we played in a place called the Chippenham, a little room above a pub where the 101ers used to play, Joe Strummer's first band. And when we played there, on about our third gig, and this guy, these guys from Poland turned up. They were looking for people for an international performance art festival in Warsaw, and they saw us play, and they invited us to go to Poland. So about our fourth, fifth, and sixth gigs were played at this international performance art festival in Warsaw. That was strange.
Well, I think it's pretty great. What kind of material were you doing? Was it all original right from the beginning?
Yeah, it was all original, except eventually we did Lola, which was a Kinks song.
Yeah,
but
of course.
All the best was
you know the story about Sister Ray, Velvet Underground?
Me.
They named it after Ray Davies because of that song.
Ah, okay. Amazing.
Brother Ray. So now I'm just curious. So you went international, and I was just a lot of bands, they start playing covers and stuff. That's how they learn. So that's why I ask you that question. That's one of the things I loved about the movement was there was people just learning how to play and starting to compose right then.
Well, that was the whole thing. You just need to know three chords, then you can write a song.
Or one chord. One chord. Funhouse.
Fine, but you know.
I have to cut us off right now because we're at the end of the first hour, the January 17, 2023 edition of Lop Peter Show. Special guest Gina Birch. Hold tight for hour two. January 17, 2023. It's the second hour of the Lop Peter Show.
Unbelievable, you help them tear you apart. It's unbelievable. other at night. There's laughter in the
Pedro Show, second hour, started off with the Raincoats doing Monk Chant. Then we had the Almighty Op with Butterbags. Raincoats again, You Kill Me. Lost and Found from a trio here out of Barcelona. Cunningham, Volt, Sarah. Mark Cunningham used to be in this no wave band in New York City called Mars. Raincoats after that, Oddy Shape. I remember when that came out. The Bobby Lees after that with Ragged Way, and finally the Raincoats again, Only Love at Night. So, can you remember the first Raincoats record?
Oh, yeah. We Jeff Travis from Rough Trade, he said, oh, we've got a little bit of leftover time from an album we're making, and would you like to go and try out in the studio? And we said, oh my God, we have, anyway, we went and we tried it out, and he said, yeah, maybe you're not quite ready. And then about 3 or 4 months later, we went again. Mayo Thompson had come, and he worked with us a bit, like on the violin.
Was it Mayo Thompson kind of a producer man for Jeff?
Yeah, he produced our first single and album.
Yeah, it seems I saw his name on other people's records, too.
He was really great for us, actually, because we were doing our stuff, and we were interesting, and we were pushing ourselves. But Mayo just helped push us just that little bit more over the edge. He made us a little bit more, like, extreme, and that was really good for us, actually. And on that occasion, there was a TV documentary crew. They were making a film about Rough Trade, and so there were all these cameras there, which was kind of weird. But it was the most exhilarating experience because, you know, it just felt like it felt like heaven on earth. You know, we were being taken seriously. We were making these extraordinary noises and sounds, and you know, it was fantastic. It was really fantastic. And then, you know, like the first bit of vinyl when it comes out, you rush to go and get it from the shop and take it home and try it and all that. Great.
How did Raincoats bring music? Did somebody come in with an idea and everybody jump on? Was it a collab? Did somebody make demos? What was the process, Gina?
Well, basically, the first song, Anna had some... No, Life on the Line. Who wrote the words? This guy, Ross, wrote the words for it. Anna wrote the music. And then I tried to put a bass line. And Anna said, look, she was really into the Beatles, and she really liked the fact that in the Beatles, everybody had their personality and their own, and brought songs. And she said, it's really important we all try to write a song. And so she wrote something a bit more sophisticated. I wrote a song called I'm No One's Little Girl. I up till then I'd always had a boyfriend, you know, and I it was like suddenly I felt like I didn't need to have this appendage, this boy who would tell me what music to listen to, or, you know, I had to hang out with his friends. I could be my own person, and that's what punk was like for me. me, you know. It was very, it made me very feisty. And so, you know, I felt I wrote this song when I was a little girl, and I'm not going to be in your family tree, even if you ask me to. I'm going to turn you down. I won't mess you around because I don't want to be, you know. And so that was just a three chord thing. And then the middle bit was like, try it out. You can do it if you choose it. Try it out.
So for this tune here, you brought in the words and you brought in the music. Okay. No, I was always curious about how Raincoats put together their songs.
Yeah, no, we did. Often we would bring in the words and the music, but then the music would get woven together, you know, because we didn't really practice on our own. We always practice together. And so I might have an idea sitting on the top of a bus, you know, with some words and a little melody. And then I probably didn't know how the chords should be. So someone would help me with the chords. My dog's growling now.
Yeah, I hear. That's okay. Look, I want to play.
Anna had written a fairy tale in the supermarket. She'd actually seen a documentary about.
Here, let me play the Raincoats. Ooh, ooh la la.
Thank you. I think you're looking for a ride. You get high, think you're looking for a ride. I met her in a club down in Osaka, where they drink champagne and it tastes just like cherry cola. D-O-L-A cola. She walked up to me and she asked me to go. I asked her her name and in a dark brown voice she said, Lola. Hello.
Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off with the Raincoats doing Ooh Ooh La La La. Then we had Thurston and myself with Talia, Like a Ghost on Fire. Raincoats with Shoutin' Out Loud. Then Gretchen, Locked Rivers. The Raincoats with In Love. Bridge of Flowers with Tambo. V Vale and Lemaire with Salzburg. And finally, Lola. There's the cover from the Raincoats. You know, Dave, at Third Band, he sent me these music, so maybe he picked them and you didn't. So, but I just asked for some music so we could check out your musical journey. And how do you know, most bands have an arc. Very
yeah.
Excited to be together at first, yeah. And then people start getting, issues start coming up. How did it go with the Raincoats?
Oh, loads of issues. We would break up often. You know, we're like...
A lot of drama.
A lot of drama. Okay. Yeah, a lot of drama. And, I remember leaving the band, and then I announced I was leaving the band once, and then burst into tears and decided to stay. but we would argue a lot. We would argue a lot, and we would think, we can't stand to be in the room together. And then we'd get back together again. It was like, you know, a stormy relationship.
Yeah. I think bands are kind of like that because they're so intense with the personalities. I mean, if it's real, if people aren't putting up a front. You're dealing with raw emotion and no mysteries, no hiding, you know. It's interesting about that.
Do you think, Jeff Travis said that we wore our hearts on our sleeve. We were more vocal about our emotional journeys than a lot of the male bands he worked with. But Anna said, oh, that's because the male bands usually had leaders. We didn't have leaders in our band, you see. We were a democracy. And I think a lot of bands do have like a boss, don't they? Do you think? Do you think that makes a difference?
It's either that or they turn into like kind of business arrangements. If the band's successful. Yeah. You're right. The way power is handled is not too democratically in a lot of bands.
Yeah.
Or if it is, it's only that like that brief period, the honeymoon. And then if they win the lotto, it turns into a business arrangement. But otherwise, everybody hates each other and stuff. Or they still hate each other and there's a business arrangement. I don't know. I've always been optimistic. I always try to look at, well, somebody's on the rudder, somebody's on the keel, somebody's at the bow. You know, like everybody can't be doing the same job. So I think I'm more in the same boat with you.
Yeah.
But it may be optimistic because when you look at the reality, you get drama.
Because, well, in my solo,
people ask me about the old days. I say it was about people, but I think, you know, so are the new days.
In my new project, it's really weird because we were at rehearsal day before yesterday, and these people said, well, what's the band called? And it was really weird because I had to say, it's called Gina Birch.
That's a good name.
No, but it's like I can't be a band, can I? I'm not a band. I'm a Gina Birch, and so it's like if I've got a band rehearsing with me, it's like, what's the band? I've never done this before.
Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. When I made my first solo record, there was actually 48 other people on it with me. Some solo record, right? But bass players, we're kind of like glue, so we kind of put things together. So I think, okay, because you're kind of man in the rudder for this proj. I want to talk more about it, though, but we're at the end of the second hour, January 17, 2023 edition, Juan Pedro Show, special guest Gina Birch. Hold tight for hour three. January 17, 2023, it's the third hour of the Juan Pedro Show.
my word that I won't do. I'll give the world to you if you want me to. I'll do anything.
Thank you. I'm out of guns, but I'm out of my head when you're not around.
For Pedro show started off the third hour with Dorothy doing Still Waiting.
That is a cover.
Okay, we'll get to it. Sarah DeVacci after that with Icon Studies 1. I guess there was a 2, 3 or whatever, but I only got the 1. Legendary Shack Shaker. Yeah, Jealous sent me this stuff off his label, new stuff. Legendary Shack Shakers with Let Me Tickle Your Innards. Tsunami Bomb, Out of Touch. Arno Core with Deadlift. And finally, the Red Crayola, Born in Flames. And I got this 7-inch, people, when it came out. And Laura Logic singing with the soprano thing there. And it's just, the band is cooking, man. The other, I can't remember the other side, Sword of God or something?
Yeah.
Right, okay. God, I don't know how that came to me, because it's been years since I heard it, but beautiful stuff. Who's on the piano?
I don't remember. That's okay. Really strange, isn't it? I don't remember.
Well, tell me about Dorothy. You say it's a cover here, Still Wait.
Yeah, it's a Prince song, actually. Dorothy was me and Vicky, the violin player from the Raincoats.
Yep.
And it was like that weird time. I think I was listening to something today about, you know, David Bowie, when he kind of decided he ran out of money and he decided he needed to make a commercial album. And so there was Let's Dance on the album.
Oh,
on the,
right.
Kind of more like commercial tunes.
Nile Rodgers. He said, I want to make a record that sells a lot.
Yeah, that's right. But then that kind of precipitated, like there was Scritti Politti. Lots of people kind of tripped into that.
You know what? I heard that's what wrecked Rough Trade, was them trying to get commercial success out of Scritti. Because those first couple Scritti Politti records are great. The little 45s.
I love them, yeah. We don't practice with PAs. We have a lot of bills to pay. All that stuff.
And also, on the album, on the record cover, they put how much it costs to print everything and press things up and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, well, that's when they were all in the Communist Party then.
Is that right?
They all did everything together and they lived in a squat. And then Green decided he was going to go commercial. And that was kind of after the whole, the 80s became very obsessed with money, I think. For me, I didn't really like it, but, I found the 80s very annoying after the movie of the 70s.
Absolutely. But 90s were kind of annoying too. Well, tell me about Dorothy.
Yeah, so basically, I'm talking about this thing where everyone kind of went pop and like trying to get a bit of commercial success. So Vicky and I, we decided we would, I don't know if you know Cindy Sherman, the photographer, artist. Well, she made a lot of these things called film stills where she photographed herself in all these different situations. And so we had this idea that we would make this record about being about the identity of these women, which was us. We could also have these other identities. So we would be whoever we chose to be that day, you know, whether we put on dungarees or a cocktail dress or whatever. So Dorothy was like this kind of ever-changing female presence. And it was kind of a pop thing, you know. We went into a posh studio. We were with Chrysalis Records and they pay, you know, there was a lot of money floating about trying to make this commercial successful record. And and then the head honcho changed and we got dropped.
You know how many times I've heard that story? Now tell me about the Hangovers, because I got 3 of these songs by something called The Hangovers, and I want to play next.
That is basically, you know, when Kurt Cobain got interested in the Raincoats, DGC decided they would sign us to make two new albums. So we made one new album, and then they dropped us. And so I had like a few pounds in my bank account that they paid us not to make the second record. And I decided I would, you know, I'd always been DIY, you know, the do it yourself, but I'd never actually done it myself. So I decided to start my own little label. It was called Smoke Records, and I would record an album. In a way, it was a solo album, but I didn't want to call it Gina Birch. So then I just gathered together a whole load of people. It was around the time I stopped drinking. I'd been drinking way too much, and so I decided, you know, it was at that turning point of drinking way too much and not drinking at all, you know. Sure. So there's a song on it called Drink. I think you may have played it. I don't know.
No, it's going to be the last song.
Yeah, well, that song was really about, you know, when you think you've given up, and then you just find that bottle in the cupboard, and then you just go for it, and you're like out of it. So that's that song. And The Hangovers was kind of that. It was about that journey from, you know, out thereness to.
Okay, here's I'm glad I'm me today.
Thank you. This is called Penciled In to Be Running Down the Street Going Woo! 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 And it will respond, show fear, and it will bite your hand off. I say, where I'm from, it's not possible to deteriorate into negative chaos. It ain't possible to deteriorate into negative chaos where I'm from, because where I'm from is a place where I am penciled in to be running down the street going
drink. Don't know why you gave up anyway. So I took the glass down from the shelf. Took the bottom on the back cover. Thank you.
Watch for Pedro show. Last music for this edition. Start that chunk off with I'm Glad I'm Me Today from The Hangovers. That's Gina's own project, including the label people, real DIY, like Walt Whitman in 1855.
But actually, I have to just interrupt there because
you can.
Slim Moon took it on.
Kill Rock Stars, yeah.
Kill Rock Stars took it on in America. But, yeah, so I was really pleased when Slim kind of found it.
Yeah, I just started working with him again. He's in Nashville now. They got the label back together.
Yeah, I think that's great because he really is a great record person. You know, it's really great that he's doing that again.
That's right. That's right. And Maggie Vale, Toby's sister, and
yeah,
beautiful thing. After that was Dumbass Youth with Penciled In to Be Running Down the Street going woo woo woo, and The Hangovers again with Soho. Anna Butters. This lady, great, I think New Zealand maybe, or Australia, but she's on bass and she's incredible. Do Not Disturb, and finally, Drink, like you said, from The Hangovers. So right now, you're practicing the Gina Birch Group for what, a tour, a recording, or what?
Yeah, I my second single comes out tomorrow, and then on the 24th of February, my album comes out on Third Man Records, thanks to Dave Buick from Detroit. Yeah. Thank you, Dave. And, I love Dave, and he's been really cool to kind of get me to do this stuff, and I've really, really had a great time doing it. I made a lot of these recordings at home over the last few years. I'd taken up painting. I'm painting these very big paintings, but in my other moments, I would just be at my computer, or I'd just put some bass in or some tunes and some lyrics. And over the years, I've managed to have a whole load of tunes recorded. And then when we decided we'd try and do an album, I took the tunes to a youth studio, youth from Killing Joke, and who produces and
I saw the first Killing Joke gig at the Whiskey, and he looked exactly like Sid Vicious.
Really?
Yeah,
oh yeah.
This was in the late 70s. Each dude in the band had their own fucking thing. One guy was like rockabilly. One guy had like paint on his face, the organ guy. They were trippy. But they're the band that a lot of bands make money on their sound, that first sound that Killing Joke had.
Yes.
And I think he's involved with Laura Logic's new music.
Yeah, he did do some co-production on Laura's record. Well, you know, when I go down there, Laura sometimes be sitting on the sofa, and then when I was doing mine, Laura might come in. But she played on the first Raincoats album. She played sax on our first album on a couple of tracks, and she played live with us when we played in London a couple of years ago, and so yeah, Laura's a good friend of mine.
But Youth helped you get stuff together for this new record you got.
Well, we co-produced it. Yeah, okay. He saw me live when I was doing some solo stuff, and he really liked what I was doing, and then he invited me to his festival in Spain to do a bit of recording and a talk and stuff. And so we decided we'd have a little go trying to see what would happen if we worked together. And, you know, he has a great sensibility, and he's also very zen, you know, and when I get very kind of wired up, he's like very calm, you know. And so we managed to, with an engineer called Michael Rendell, we managed to bring all these tracks together, and it's been a fantastic journey, really.
That's great. Gina, do you have your own website?
I do have a website. It's called Gina Birch Painting.
Okay, people, GINABIRCHPAINTING.com for more infos, because I want people to find out about you. I've been following you all these years. It's just an honor to get to talk with you. You get any other music? You have anything else come back? You got a guaranteed invite on the Watt from Pedro show. I'd like to have you aboard anytime you want to come, please.
You're very, very lovely. Thank you so much. I'm sorry I was very wired up at the beginning.
You're great. You know what Popeye said, right? I am what I am. It's okay.
I'm olive oil.
That's olive oil, right. People, it's been the January 17, 2023 edition. Pedro shall keep you powdered.